I'm proud of you. Well, hello everyone, welcome to the Jeep Life Podcast, proudly presented by ArmorLite, the toughest flooring on the trail.
Presented.
So I think I just figured out why we had 78 people last time we were on. It's because Terry was in Moab talking to everybody.
That's right.
Obviously.
And then, like, I'm curious, what did he fly back to do the podcast?
I guess, something of the sort.
Well, you're catching us on a beautiful night. Don't adjust your sets, ladies and gentlemen. We have four people here in the studio. We're bursting at the seams.
The Eclipse Special.
It's the Eclipse Special.
So, yeah, we've got all four of us in the studio. I'm back from the Moabs, and you guys held down the fort. I appreciate it while we were gone.
Well, we tried.
Yeah.
Not much.
I feel like at least the corner was blowing away.
My favorite part was how we would be on every Sunday or Monday from 3 a.m. to 8 p.m. and then didn't show up the following Monday.
Yeah.
We just wanted to find out who was going to complain.
Right.
Who noticed?
Right.
Yeah, so it's all good. I'm glad everybody's here. But I want to thank our presenting sponsor, ArmorLite, and they help out our listeners with an exclusive discount at Jeep Life Podcast 10 for a complete system at ArmorLite. GoArmorLite.com. And I got to hang out with them out in Moab.
Well, I got to install an ArmorLite.
Yeah.
And use the crap out of my ArmorLite.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah. Seriously, we did. It was nasty.
It was a nasty time. But seriously, ArmorLite for the win. Installing it can be a little bit tricky. However, once you have it installed, it's super easy to clean up. The drain plugs are amazing, and I can't wait to clean mine up again.
Yeah, I did that firsthand in the Gladiator out there. Got it all dirty and then cleaned it up for the show, and it looked good as new.
Comes right back.
Yeah. So I guess let's jump in. You guys were out on the trail last week, right?
Last weekend? So we were hanging out with Tread Lightly, and Don and I did a trail cleanup at AOAA, Anthracite Outdoor Adventure Area. And so it was a super good time. We were able to hit probably about three different sites, kind of cleaning up different piles of trash. One of them was the main site that we were going to, and then the other two were smaller. We pulled a whole bunch of tires out of the woods.
That was my favorite part.
We had a blast. We were hanging out with the Quadratech JTE. So that is JL converted to a Gladiator, two-door Gladiator, and it has a rear-mounted winch.
Yeah, that's,
so we were able to use the rear-mounted winch to pull tires out of the ground, and we felt like men.
it is a good feeling to use that rear-mounted winch, though.
It was
a good feeling to use any winch.
Yeah, well.
But yeah,
there is that. So I was out in Moab and got to hang out with the West Coast Tread Lightly guys while I was out there. But I wish I was able to do the trail cleanup here. I had a prior engagement in Delaware and wasn't able to.
It was important.
It was important. So let's talk a little bit about EJS and my adventure out there.
Heck yeah.
It was the EJS that I got to do the most trails. I did a ton of trails. Matter of fact, did three in one morning before I took Justin back to the airport. We were just trying to get as much as we could in. The weather was schizophrenic. It was 65 and sunny, or it was 30 and snowing, or the wind was blowing, or it was raining. So it had a little bit of everything. It's because Easter was early this year.
Yeah.
It was a little more tumultuous, if you will. I was able to drive the Oracle Gladiator. I now want a Gladiator so bad. That thing is awesome. It's on 37s. It's a stock Rubicon with the Mopar lift. It's not like the Bronco that has the zone lift on it or anything extra. It's pretty basic, but still pretty cool. It was able to do everything I wanted it to. I think it was crazy.
Well, you had lockers.
I did, and I used them a couple of times.
Yeah.
But the cool thing about out there is traction really isn't an issue. It literally is like driving on sandpaper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not like here.
No.
No, I used a lot of lockers, and I used a lot of spinny tires this past weekend.
Right. But it was great. I mean, you do need sometimes with the steepness sometimes of those ledges, you do need a little extra work with it. You need that here, but they don't think you don't have trees. There aren't trees. I did get to hang out with some really cool people and arrange some future guests.
That's cool.
Which is pretty awesome for our listeners and meet some really, really cool people. Some people that I knew already, which friends of the podcast, the RevKit team, we've had them on, and Mike and Dan want to come back on the show. But I did get to do some night wheeling with those guys. And I know the guys in the studio, I've already kind of told this story. So Wednesday night, I had set that aside for, industry dinners and parties and just doing the industry thing, going out and being a representative of Oracle. And so I went to the first one. It was great. Met some people, got us a person lined up to come on the show, and I'm excited about that. I don't want to announce it until we have a date locked in. So then that was great. Then went to the next dinner that was put on by Dana Spicer and Super Winch and Weston. And that was awesome. Tons of great prizes. Did I win? No. But it was still pretty cool. But lined up a couple people there. And one of them is huge. And I think that's going to happen. But after that, I went to the next one, and it was starting to fizzle out as we got there. But Dan and Mike came up and said, "Hey, we're going out." And I was like, "All right, where are we going?" "Oh, we're going to do a night run on Fins and Things." "All right, cool, let's go." So, it's 10 o'clock at night, and we're headed out to go wheeling. What I didn't know is they had already kind of challenged themselves. It was going to be a two-wheel drive ride.
They weren't Fins and Things and two-wheel drive.
Yes.
At 10, 11, high horsepower 12, LSs they, and LSXs.
They all have LS and LX swaps and 40-inch tires, coilovers, the whole nine yard.
And a lead foot.
And they're all young and dumb and...
That sounds like somebody. I know, right?
The whole time.
No, he's grown up.
No, I haven't.
He is another year older.
He did grow up tonight.
Mm-hmm. Slightly.
But I was like, Billy should be here. He would be eating this up. But we took all the tough offshoots of Fins and Things, and they were just pushing it off the rev limiters and just having a great time and watching all those vehicles. Just
there's only one way to send it.
There was full send. Let
and
me
that's
tell
full send.
And here I am. I just crawl up every obstacle, in four low, because my vehicle's not built for that. But it was, I could do everything they did. I just did a lot slower and quieter. But it was pretty awesome to hang out with them. Then the industry show is always the. That's kind of why we went out there, was for the vendor show and did some sales and that was great. Meet a lot of people. But the highlight of the trip was Monday night. We did a trail ride, Rockside Engineering, Armalite, and Oracle teamed together to do a sunset ride up 7 Mile Rim and did backwards bill. And as we're going out, it's, daylight-ish. We're driving right past the Jeep concept vehicles that are already set up for the next morning for the.
So you stole one of those?
We did. We just stole one of those.
Okay.
No, they would have shot us on sight. There's no rules and laws out there.
They would have had to catch us first.
I know, right? But we had 29 Jeeps on this ride, and it was stellar. We kind of planned it so that we would get right at the Monitor Merrimack rock formations at sunset and line all the vehicles up without lights, let the sunset set go behind us, and then light up the sky. And it was really cool to see all those Jeeps with their lights and everything. So that was the highlight. We all had a good time. We did all the obstacles, and then we got off the trail, and man, it was a really, really good time. Wish you guys could have been there.
I know. I'm jealous. I think we need to all fly out next year.
I thought about it, and then I looked at the tickets, and they were $1,000 a piece.
Wow.
We're driving.
Really? It's so expensive to fly out there.
Why is it so much?
It's cheaper to drive.
I mean, if you look and fly into Salt Lake or Salt Lake City or Grand Junction, it's not as bad. But you have to get from Salt Lake City to Moab from Grand Junction.
It's cheaper to put two rigs on a trailer and drive with three guys.
Yeah, so
you're chipping in for gas.
Just the time commitment to drive out.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's a 40-hour drive.
Like I don't even want to fly. I just want to teleport.
Yeah, well, we all want to just teleport, dude. But you got to put the time in to have the fun.
Yeah, no doubt.
But you're going to say you're going to put the time in to learn how to teleport.
Well, that too.
I've been working on it for a long time. If I make any breakthroughs, I'll let you know.
Yeah, it's quite the drive out. You know, I took the long way.
We're not taking the long way.
You mean there's a long way for a 40-hour drive? Wait, hang on.
It's called a Four Corners trip.
Yeah, no doubt. It was crazy. Then, of course, coming back, I'm not going to talk our horror story.
Let's not talk about that.
No, it's not. But we made it back in one piece, and I made my flight by 3 hours and made it back home. But it was one of those amazing trips. And, you know, Eric's on right now. I got to spend a lot of time wheeling with him. His
cool.
Jeep finally made it back out to Moab. I know it hadn't been back actually in Moab since he's owned it. But it was good to have that out there. And he was like a kid in a candy store.
Well, that Jeep is highly capable.
Oh,
so.
My God. Yeah, very.
Yeah.
But he did spend a lot of time working on it. There was a lot of clacks and rattles. And
you need to.
Yeah.
Work out the bugs.
That's right.
For sure. But, if you get a chance, I definitely recommend Moab for I don't want to say a once-in-a-lifetime trip because you should do it more than once, but it is really a mecca for our industry and just to get out there. There are hard trails, there are easy trails, and both are just as fun because you come around a corner and you see a sight you've never seen before. Moab it's as if someone took Mars and just plopped it in the middle of Utah, and it's absolutely gorgeous. The Red Rock is ridiculous. It truly is like wheeling on sandpaper. You get that skirt, skirt sound of your wheels, the four-wheel drive.
That's what you turn the lockers on for, just that sound.
Just that sound.
Yeah.
But it's therapeutic to the soul, too. You know, you just get out there and you just stand there.
Yeah, I want to see the Red Rock.
Yeah, Red Rock, all the dinosaur trails, like-minded people. All over, we're all off-roaders, and I got out there before EGS started, so there were more Toyotas and Broncos out there than when I first got out there. But it was still, even though they own a different branded vehicle, those people are probably very similar mindset as an off-roader,
that's the indigenous people out there,
right? It really is,
yep.
And that was a lot of fun, and seeing other people in our industry, guys at the Jeep Talk show were out there. And at some point we're going to do a joint thing with them where Tony and I just sit down and shoot the breeze and we'll use the audio for both shows. And that way I keep him honest and he keeps me honest. And, but it was good to see those guys out there and, just all the industry professionals that end up in that part of the country for a week. It's kind of interesting just to see those people, because a lot of them are West Coast people, and we don't get to see them much on the East Coast.
It's kind of a distance.
Yeah,
you
know,
even if you saw people that are 2-3 states away, that's somewhat of an accomplishment.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then everybody in one location, nonetheless.
Yep, right.
Yeah, all at one time.
Yep.
It's a thing.
Lots of fun. Got to hang out with Holly. She's coming here again this summer.
Oh, good.
I know somewhere in June. I don't have the exact dates, but we'll get to spend some time with Holly and the team. Marvin, you know, people that have been on the show, Tanner.
Yep.
It was good to hang out with them, and they're friends of the podcast, and, you know, they say good things about us even when we're not around. So it was
appreciate
good
to
do that and reline that up. I know I've got Rockslide Engineering on the calendar to come back on the show to talk about all the new stuff, including stuff that I can talk about now.
Dude, their trailer was freaking sweet.
Oh, that trailer is
sweet. I want one.
Yeah, for sure. But Rockslide Engineering is now on the Jeep Performance Parts list, and
wow,
you can buy your Jeep with Rockslide Engineering on it from the factory.
That's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. So that I've known about that for a while, but I was sworn to secrecy over a drink, and and it's good to be able to talk
about
that.
You remember that you swore to secrecy.
I worked for Apple for 18 years. I'm pretty good at keeping the secret.
That's right.
You know, but it's good to be back home, and I can't wait for us to be out on the trail together.
I know.
And that's
going to happen
soon. Yeah. I mean, so many times I would just sit there and go, man, where's my guys? Man, it would be so much fun if they were here. Oh, wait. At 2:00, McDonald's run in the buggy. They would have allowed that.
We would have went. We wouldn't have asked. Just would have went.
Right.
Although there is sort of an edginess to it when it's not allowed.
Yeah, but then also we have an escape route of trails.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
Probably not.
But, you know, I did some trails I haven't done before. I did some, you know, old favorites. I have my list of three that I haven't done that I have to do the next time I'm out there. I was going to do two of them on this run, and, you know, I didn't want to drive 45 minutes to, you know. So I just did the ones I could do, and I could do a bunch of them. It was really, really great. And I'm glad to be home. That's it. That's my EJS. Oh, and the concepts. Jeep always does concept vehicles. We got to see them the night before out on the trail. We didn't get to go up close to them, but we got to see them. I don't think there's anything special this year because everything has already been out except for the Willys model. That was pretty nice, but it was nothing special. The upholstery was nice on all of them. And then Matt Zerbrick's team did some amazing graphics work. They really are owning that in a big way.
Well, I saw that chop down on running the oversized.
Yeah.
I was like,
yeah.
Said to my wife, I go, I think we got room for a fifth Jeep.
But that's an older concept that they did a few years ago. Yeah,
I don't think I'd ever seen that.
Yeah.
So when I saw it, I was like, oh, that's pretty neat.
Yeah, I mean, it had some updates. Like, they modernized things, but that was a previous concept. So on that standpoint, it was a little underwhelming, if you will. It was still cool to walk through the Jeep booth and see all these vehicles. And
Last year was a hard year to top, though, too, because they had some cool concepts last year.
Yeah.
With the Grand Wagoneer.
Yep, and Bob.
Yep.
The Bobbed Gladiator with the Hemi in it. And, of course, Magneto 3.0 was out. They didn't do any... I'm not sure.
No EV stuff?
No, they had to part them out so they could build them.
Yeah, right. Right. But it was fun. I'm going to question, what are the three that I want to do? I want to do Elephant Hill because I just like the idea of the canyon, you know, driving tight in that canyon. It's not a hard trail at all, but it is a badge of honor trail, and I'd like to get it. I want to do Pritchett Canyon. Mm-hmm. I haven't done Pritchett Canyon, and I want to do it. I think my skill set is enough that I can do it now. Maybe not, you know, a year or two ago, but I think now I've got enough seat time that I feel like I can accomplish it, especially, you know, if I have a vehicle that can stretch its legs a little bit. And then, what is the third one?
So I want to do cliffhanger.
Cliffhanger. That's it.
Yeah.
That's the third one.
I wanted to do cliffhanger.
I want to do cliffhanger. Yeah. Yeah. I've seen so many videos of that, and I just watching a video of my puckers, and
I just want to do it.
I want to do it. I want to be that close to the edge of the world and driving up the side of a cliff. I definitely want to do that.
You better hurry up before they put a guardrail on it.
I know. I know, seriously. Right?
But it's, I'm happy that I had such a good time. The coming back was a struggle, but I missed this, and I wish I'd done more of this while I was out there. I always have plans. I take the equipment. I carry the damn equipment everywhere, and then I don't do a third of what I wanted to do. I'm just going too much,
mm-hmm.
and then when I come home,
I hear you.
I crash.
So what have you been doing, Jetty Jason, jeeping wise?
I didn't get to do that, but I did go driving on the beach the other
week. Yeah. Saw some pictures.
Yeah. So
last Friday, you sent me some pictures. I was out on the trail, and you were out on your trail.
That's right. Well, you know, it was really interesting because, see, so this time of the year, it's still off season.
Right.
And my little guy is all about fishing,
yeah.
And there is a striper derby that you can register for, which does grant you access for fishing purposes up and down the entire beach. So you're not just restricted to the zones,
the low end,
the normal zones that you can have it. And because of all the rain, there was like the world's largest tide pool I'd ever seen. Literally picture, you know, you've got the coastline, sort of a mound of sand,
yeah.
And then like a mile and a half long tide pool.
Wow.
So he was like, I want to see this. We're going to drive up, and we were trying to go figure out if we could go fish anywhere, but it really was consuming a lot of the beach. So we didn't get too far, and did that. And then the entries, the in and out was flooded out, which that was part of what I had sent you. I'm like, yeah, I feel like I'm going through a mud puddle, but instead of a mud puddle, it's a sand puddle.
Sand hole.
So yeah, so it was just a little of that. Just trying to.
Yeah.
Have fun with
Dr. Don
family.
I worked on show notes and write this email from this guy Blake that sent us a picture of his shop.
Yeah, about that, huh?
Yeah,
that's pretty cool. Good.
Yeah, I'm digging it.
You want to read it out loud?
I certainly would love to.
Sounds great.
Just wanted to say hi. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me do a redo on that. Just wanted to say that I love the podcast. I listen to Jeep Life every day at work and then re-listen to old episodes until I can get my new episode fix.
That's dedication right there.
That's going back.
That's a glowing review.
Yeah, you know, I realized, like, we have a lot of recordings. When I went back the Patreon stuff.
Yeah.
Oh. I don't know if you are still accepting shop submissions or not, but here it is. It's not much, but it gets the job done. It's a carport attached to the duplex I rent with my wife. Sure, it's just barely enough to squeeze my XJ and tools into, but I'm always so happy to have a place of my own to work on my Jeep. When I first got into off-roading, I lived in a third-story apartment. I can tell you it's not fun carrying a jack and jack stands down, up and down three flights of stairs. I still remember the apartment security getting mad at me for doing an MP242 transfer case replacement in the middle of the parking lot. Ha ha. Anyway, Jeep up. The great work, and here's a Jeep wave to you. I love the picture. Like,
it's freaking sweet.
It's seriously, how cool is that? Like, you don't, just goes to show you, you don't need to have like a full on shop. You can make do
with what you have.
Yep,
man.
Absolutely.
Yep. And for those viewing at home, I'm trying to bring it up real quick and put it on the show for you, but it
nice and clean and organized, and he's, you know, I it kind of takes me back to the days when I didn't have all the equipment I do now.
Heck yeah.
And life was a lot simpler, and I still managed to get the job done probably better then than I do now.
Yeah, see if this will work. Yeah, there it is.
You almost start to lean on all the equipment when you've got everything.
You do. Oh, absolutely.
Because now you're like, what, like, do you mean plasma, I don't have a lift?
This,
like,
plasma cutter isn't cutting fast enough.
When you have to
I need a hypotherm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
back in the day, a bag of thermite, and
yeah,
we're gonna
make this hot in the oven, and then put the other piece in the freezer. That's and
right. Yep. So no, there's a lot to be said for that. That's cool.
And that's a good looking chair. Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Hopefully everything will go back together.
What bumper is that in the front? Say Quadratec?
No,
I don't know what it is.
Badlands winch. I can't tell what that plate is.
Yeah, I don't know either. I mean, it's pretty cool, whatever it is.
It's a good clean-looking bumper.
Blake, thanks for sending that in. And yeah, the plate says it starts with an R.
Yeah.
So it's R squiggle Y.
Hmm.
It's kind of like my signature.
Rough stuff? No. What's their symbol? I don't know. Uh-huh. All right. Well, Blake, if you're listening, let us know what front bumper's on there.
And
we're all curious.
Blake's up
now
in Washington State, apparently.
Hmm.
So thanks for sending that in. If you've got an email, you've got a shop that you want to show off, you
send
have,
it in.
Send it in. Email address is info@jeeplifepodcast.com. That's the easiest way to reach us.
Send them the picture of my shop.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
We got a good one.
We got a really good one.
Is that the one with the lift?
Yeah.
That picture is awesome.
It is. At first, I was like, oh, it's in... I thought it was just a shot of Don's shop. And then I look, oh, wait, that's some flexing going on right there. Somebody used the lift creatively.
We always do.
But I mean, whoever edited that picture, I think it's some of the best marketing that's ever come out of Quadratec. Like, they made my shop look good.
Good, yeah.
And clean.
Yep.
Yes, they did.
Yep.
That's awesome.
It's all that AI.
Don't let it go to his head, though.
No, right. I
did say it's the only good marketing that, I mean, some of the best marketing.
So we've got some events coming up. We're going to be out and about for sure. And starting in like 2 weeks, it's going to get busy.
It's going to get crazy.
Yeah.
Starting April 20th is the Jeep Enthusiasts of Eastern Pennsylvania Trail Ride up at AOAA.
Yeah.
And then we're going to be heading straight into April 24th and 28th. That is Jeep Beach in Daytona, Florida.
Yep,
you're
be there.
You're heading there, Terry? Yep. Unfortunately, this one has been canceled. So May 3rd to the 5th, Oversand Expo in Wiowa, New Jersey.
Heartbroken.
Has been canceled.
Heartbroken. I wanted to.
So you heard it here. And if you and your friends are going, please let them know that you're not going to be going anymore. So Oversand Expo in Wiowa, New Jersey is canceled this year.
Well, you can go. Just send a check to Jamie. And
yeah.
Just
yeah.
Park on the beach. The Wiowa police won't have a problem.
They won't have too much of a problem. Right. June 18th and 19th is Bantam Jeep Festival in Butler, Pennsylvania. June 29th is Reclaim for First Responders event in Columbus, New Jersey, put on by the Pine Barrens Venom Jeep Club. July 12th to the 14th is New Jersey Jeep Invasion in Wiowa, New Jersey. That is definitely happening this year,
yep.
And tickets are almost sold out. So make sure you get yours. Head over to New Jersey Jeep Invasion Eventbrite page, and you will be able to get your Friday, Saturday, Sunday pass, or yep, whatever combination you want.
And we'll be there. I think all of us might be there.
Yeah, I think so.
So
July 19th to 20th is PA Albridge Jeep Fest out in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. I will definitely probably be there as well.
I won't be at that one. I'll be Bronco.
Oh, Bronco Fest.
Bronco busting.
That sounds like a good time.
Yeah.
And then August 22nd to the 24th is Great Smoky Mountain Jeep Invasion in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee.
Yep, I'll be there.
I'll be there. Don will be there.
Yep. We're going wheeling. So what kind of pants do you have to wear to Bronco busting?
Assless chaps.
You said it, I did.
Yep. I love it.
August 25th is the Warren Trail Ride at Windrock Trails. And
it's Windrock Park.
Windrock Park. My bad.
Off-road park or something.
Off-road park in Oliver... Yeah. Oliver Springs, Tennessee. And then September 21st to the 22nd is Fall New Jersey Jeep Invasion in Ocean City.
Ocean City.
It's in Ocean City this year.
I'm in
command of the ocean faring area.
Yeah, you are. I got to check in with
Jason. I do have
Jetty
to say,
Jason.
What, two or three, nah, three, three or four years ago, yeah. The three of us did the fall invasion, and
that
it
was
so relaxed.
Seriously.
That was
a good weekend.
That was one of the best events I've ever
That's
done.
That's where Monkey Butler was invented.
Oh, yeah.
That's exactly where it was invented.
That was the Telly Nut and Monkey Butler.
Yes.
And
oh, the Telly
some
Nut.
Shittery was going on.
Oh, my God. But it was one of those times where the three of us got to bond and... You know, it was bad.
It was the only show my Jeep was ever out.
And we put it in the back of the booth at first.
Oh, we did, didn't we? Put it in
yeah,
the back
we put
first.
It on the side or the other side. Yeah. Everyone was like, oh, whose Jeep is this? And we're like, oh, there's Terry's, there's Don's, there's Billy's, there's Terry's. Oh, Don's is over there.
But since then, yours has always been in the back, or
it's, oh yeah, that yeah. was the only time. It's yeah. always in. It's always in the back. It's all right.
Somebody's got to be there.
Yeah. I
know. Oh my God, that's awesome. Yeah. So make sure to check that out if you're not already going. Go. It's a good time. It's one of those things. It's no pressure. It's chill. And you get to see a bunch of Jeeps. It's awesome.
Heck yeah.
All right.
We're going to make it electrifying again up in here.
Yeah, it is going to be electrifying, if you will.
So before we start, I'm just going to, before I start going through these notes, we're going to make some references to some different electrical tests and things like that. I am actually not going to go over tonight because of time. The actual process of doing these tests. However, they are in the show notes, and all the show notes are now being posted to Patreon. I've went in and reorganized the entire Patreon account, so the show notes are actually tagged to the show episode. So if you're listening to an episode and you had a question or didn't quite get something, you can go in and look at the show notes for that.
Cool.
Plus, there's a new article, more ride article in there. I accidentally deleted your "What Gears Is Best" article, so
okay.
We're gonna have to repost
I have it again.
That. Yeah,
I have a whole bunch of stuff to go on there.
That was my learning curve in Patreon since I hadn't been in it for so long. But anyway, okay. All right. So last week we talked about like basic principles of electricity and things like that. This week we're gonna get a little more specific. We're going to talk about some systems, common problems, how to test those for those problems.
Light it on fire and call the insurance company.
Yeah.
I had that thought this week.
Amen. So before you do any of this stuff, I'm a firm believer you need a good foundation to start on, right? And our vehicles, that's battery
Don,
starting
what's
and
our
charging.
Foundation?
Battery starting and charging. Thank you, Bill. Starting with the battery, and just because your Jeep starts every morning does not mean the battery's in great shape. So first thing you do...
How do you test if your battery's in good shape?
So the best way to do it is... To you really should have a piece of equipment that you can put a load test on the battery, but that's all expensive stuff. Like the Autel I have at my shop was $3,000.
Okay.
Now you can get like at Harbor Freight the old pile style
mm-hmm.
for.
Can you just put
like
a big screwdriver across it and be like, yeah, it melted a number three.
Hell
that
yeah.
works it.
Oh yeah.
All right.
Let me know.
It's old school, baby.
So. There's a couple ways you can do it without, you know, having that equipment. So the first thing is to, and I firmly believe that if you are wheeling, you should have in your toolkit a digital multimeter capable of measuring volts AC, DC, resistance, and amps AC and DC at the minimum. So you get your DMM and you check for what we call open
That's a
circuit.
Digital multimeter, DMM. Please remember that one for the rest of this.
Write that in your notes.
Write this down.
Yep. So do an open circuit voltage test. That's nothing on. And you go ahead and you put your positive lead on the positive, your red test lead on your positive battery post. negative on, negative post, and you should have at least 12.6 volts. So it's 2.1 volts per cell.
Right.
And you have six cells, so it's 12.6. So now if you dip down around 12.4, 12.3, not horrible.
Yeah.
You're below 12.1.
It's not starting very well.
It's not right. Your battery's not charged as well as it should. So another test that you can do is voltage drop across the terminals. Let's check and see what kind of condition your terminals are. So again, with your multimeter set to volts DC, red test lead goes on the battery positive terminal. Black one test lead goes on the actual post. And if you have more than like 0.2 volts, you have corrosion or something happening between the post and the terminal. And here's what happens. People will coat their batteries with stuff they shouldn't. They'll take grease and paint grease on it so that, you know, it inhibits the corrosion, or they think it does, or spray it with like this brake quiet, the red tacky stuff.
Yeah.
And what happens is that stuff actually melts with the heat from the engine and then goes down between the posts of the battery.
Interesting.
And the terminal, absolutely.
So, shiny brushed is clean, and clean is
absolutely
good.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm a firm believer in not putting anything on there.
No dielectric grease. No,
no, no crap.
Stuff.
Nope, I wouldn't do it. So, I do not.
Interesting.
So, another important test to do to check your battery is what we call a negative negative side voltage drop. So, we're going to check the insulated negative side of the battery, and you're going one test lead. You're doing a voltage drop on the negative side, basically one test lead to the battery, one to the engine block, and that's checking your ground side of your circuit. And that should never be, any of your voltage drops should never be more than 0.5 volts. Last test for your battery, parasitic draw.
Oh, yeah.
So parasitic draw is the amount of amperage being pulled off the battery while the vehicle's sitting and key is off. You should never have more than 0.075 or 75 milliamps is the absolute max.
So turning on all those rock lights and leaving them on while I'm in the parking lot,
well,
should
unless
be
they're
limited.
Oracle, listen, unless they're Oracle LED, you're going to have more than 0.075 amps. So now, 50 milliamps is about the average for that. On some vehicles, you'll see it on the high side. You'll see 75 milliamps, But for the most part, you know, you want that down pretty low. So
and that's continuous parasitic draw, you know, just stuff that you would leave on.
Right.
If you're just turning it on to, you know, do the show or whatever, that's one thing because you can turn it off and get back on.
Right.
The
if every minute that it's off, but, it's just
right.
pulling.
So and again, I have all the, you know, all the directions for how to do that are in here in the show notes, and you can get those on Patreon. Because there are some tips to it, like, you know, you should really leave the vehicle sit for up to 5 minutes once you do the test, because you want to make sure that the parasitic amperage is, it takes modules
right.
a little bit to go to sleep. So, like, I had my daughter's Volkswagen in, and we were doing a parasitic draw on that. It started at, like, 250 milliamps, and it dropped to 129, and then it actually took a good another 5 minutes till that dropped down to, it was 50 milliamps.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah, and there are some computers that keep thinking, too, while they're attached to the battery, too.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's what that parasitic draw is. That's usually to keep memory alive. And
it needs to know when you push the button to start the car,
yep.
you know.
Yep. So, yeah, it's they just go into standby. So. On the charging side, your alternator, you want to make sure you got between 13.2 and 15.2 volts when it's running. There is two additional tests. You're going to do voltage drops on the positive insulated circuit. And you do not want to be above a half a volt. And then you can also do it in the negative side of the alternator, which is from the case to the engine block, because the alternator generator grounds through the case. And again, neither of those should be above a half a volt. It is key to do that, to check that on the newer Jeeps, JKs, JLs, because of the way they actually regulate voltage. So they're running, what they're doing to regulate voltage on those is they're looking at battery voltage, but it has to do with resistance. Well, resistance greatly affects it. And therefore, because they're going after a target voltage and therefore either get an overcharge or an undercharge issue. So JKs, JLs are really subject to that. And then what they end up doing is pulse width modulating the rotor side of the alternator to make it charge more. So, starting system. Yeah. So starter.
Crank that bitch over.
same thing. Starter.
It's your number one battery test.
Your insulated positive circuit. You want to make sure that you do voltage drop across that. Make sure that that's in good shape. Again, no more than a half a volt. And you're going to do the same thing on the negative side. You don't want more than half a volt. And then you're just going from the case to the block.
And starters are very simple. Like, it's just a motor and a solenoid.
That's it.
They're very simple.
Yep. That's it. Yeah. So. And they don't really, starters themselves don't, like, when they fail now, they fail.
It's, yep. Right. You're not hitting it with a hammer and
it just don't
work.
Well, sometimes, but you're not getting that slow crank from the starter. If you're getting a slow crank, it's somewhere else usually anymore. But
it's either alive or dead.
Yep.
Yep. Yep. So that's.
And when they're dead, that's awfully inconvenient.
But with
shit don't start.
No, but when you do start getting high resistance in these circuits, like I said, it affects everything else. Mm-hmm. So, you know, make sure that these three circuits are in good shape. Plus, you don't want to be out in the woods and, like Billy said, your shit don't start.
Yeah, it's not fun.
No.
That's the worst.
Yeah. I think that was Cherokee life.
It was a lot of lives, dude. Yeah. Let's not talk about it.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
I usually broke something else that just controlled me getting somewhere.
Or steering.
Or, yeah, steering, drive shafts.
Steering led to the worst outing the three of us have ever had.
Okay, so let's get to the stuff everybody wants to hear about. I really took notes and wrote notes down on four systems, accessory systems that I feel like are on a lot of different vehicles. Winch, fridge,
yep.
Audio.
And light.
And lights, yep. So now there's not that there couldn't be more, you know, e-lockers, things like that. But,
yeah.
But these are some common ones. Winch. So first thing that I'd say for putting a winch in electrically, I'm not getting into mounting that winch tonight or anything like that. No. We're talking about the electrical system. Number one, make sure that you have some kind of circuit breaker, fuse, or interrupter on it.
Cutoff switch.
Yep, that's the interrupter.
Yep.
And
circuit breaker is exactly what it sounds like. It is a high amp circuit breaker or a fuse rated to the amps that your winch is actually going to draw.
It's going to be kind of hard to find.
So fuses for that, you're looking at a big sucker.
Yeah.
And
bus fuse.
You're looking, winches, when they're peaking out, they will hit 340, 400 amps.
Yeah.
Like that's a lot of current traveling through those lines. Now you probably won't find the fuse. They do make circuit breakers, and the easiest is the power interrupter.
Well, and also, I would most likely want the interrupter on it because the interrupter also gives you the ability to shut the winch down in case of solenoid pack.
And put that interrupter on the positive side, guys. It doesn't work that well on the negative side.
Yeah.
Because
winches... Well, it still leaves something that could ground out.
Right, winches can ground out.
Yeah. Well, yeah, absolutely, wholeheartedly. Oh.
My luck, it'll ground out.
Yeah. Make sure you are using the correct size cables. So if you buy a brand new winch, no big deal. It comes with the cable.
Should.
It's not going to come with, it may come with, like Super Winch used to ship them with a circuit breaker bank. But I don't know of any company that's shipping it with interrupters. But comes with the cables, I think. Usually 9 times out of 10, it comes with the cables. make sure that you, if it doesn't, if it's a used one, that you're using the right cables. Because, again, 300, 350 mm-hmm. amps is a
big
draw.
They will melt quick.
Oh, they will. So, you know, that's super important.
Also, inspect the quality of the cables, like when you get them and over time. You know, it's another thing to just keep an eye on.
Yep. Yep, absolutely. Connections. If you are building a set of cables for it, do not get the cheap Harbor Freight ring terminals and crimp them on. So there are actually, and I put a link to some terminals, heavy-duty battery terminals, and tools to actually crimp them on the cables so that you have a good contact.
Properly.
Otherwise, yep. Cable management is ultra important. Keep the cables off of or away from anything hot. Thermodynamics makes a huge difference in resistance. And so if something gets hot, resistance goes up too high, you lose performance, you could possibly end up damaging something. And make sure that they're away from moving stuff as well.
My first winch, actually the cable ran across something that did move, and it wore down the sheathing and literally was moments away from catching on fire.
Yeah, you're lucky, because that is a big cable. It'll weld through stuff.
Quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was one that, you know, wasn't aware of until I think you and I found it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, actually, I do kind of remember that now, for sure.
I mean, it was a lifetime ago, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, just be aware of that. I wish I had been aware of it, right?
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, it was
sparky.
It was over top of the sway bar.
Yeah.
And from the sway bar twisting, it had just damn near rubbed a hole through it. So, but that's all right. We put some electrical tape over it and trucked on.
Trucked on.
Yeah.
Stick of gum.
Yeah. All right. So, here's some simple diagnostics. And again, I'm not going into details with this, but winch stops working. First thing I would do is, again, I'm going to get that digital multimeter out. I'm setting it to volts DC, and I'm checking both the negative and positive side at my solenoids, okay, or contactors, whatever you want to call them. And I should have battery voltage there, okay? If I don't, I'm actually going to check. I'm going to move and check my ground side at the contactor to ground, make sure that I've got good resistance. It should probably be no more than 5 to 10 ohms max. And then I'm going back, if I have a good ground and I still have no power, I'm going back to my fuse, checking or power supply, and checking if I have power there. So you're kind of just tracing it back, using the voltmeter and checking power flow on it. There's not a whole lot. It's not like... You got a ton of stuff. Most winches don't have switches to turn them on. It's pretty much plugged a remote in. It's pretty much power wires to the winch, and then plug the winch controller in at the winch. Lights.
They go bright.
They do go bright.
I don't know.
Some do.
Some lights are brighter than other lights.
I feel like we're getting into like metaphoricals and stuff. Is that how we say that? Metaphoricals? Did I mispronounce that correctly?
No, that's mispronounced correctly, yes.
Perfect. So first thing with lights is, and again, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about radios and things like that, but I think Roy nailed it with last week, Roy from Alpine, when he said plug and play.
Plug and play is the best, and also stay away from aluminum clad wiring crap.
Yeah.
Yep.
But plug and play, and you know, that's one of the things that I really liked about when we had the Bronco in and we were doing a little bit of cable management in the shop.
Yep.
Like all Oracle stuff is plug and play. You're not running wires. You're not, like, the whole harness is there. They give you everything you need for it, so you don't have to worry about any of this other stuff, like making sure you got the properly rated fuse. To know, you have to figure out what the amp
that's
draw
just the
is.
Idiot switch, come on.
Yeah, about it. You have to know what the amp draw is on the light. So you either have to have the specifications for the light, or you need to measure the amperage before you put a fuse in. But key to
throw
have
a 40 amp in there and call it a day.
Yeah, right. Maxi fuse. Switch. Make sure the switch you're putting in is rated for the proper amount. You'd be surprised. Like, switches are not rated for that much. And
no,
therefore,
they're not.
A lot of times, it's not a big deal with LED stuff anymore, but the old incandescent lights.
Oh, you could, yeah, if you had like
a bar
the,
of it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
the old KC. Bar of six Hellas on there.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Absolutely. Like, you're just going to
melt the switch together, and then you're never going to turn off, and then you're going to burn your Jeep to the ground.
Yep.
You know it's drawing power when you turn it on and you hear the engine go.
I wonder how many people bought those and then like looked at the relay and tossed it and was like,
nah, I don't need this. Just put it through a switch. Yeah. We're done.
This is a lot of
micro switch.
This is a lot of extra wiring.
So yeah, that's key, you know. And then again, making sure that if you do have to run wire, that you're running the right wire.
Gauge.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right size. So, using the following steps to diagnose an accessory light circuit. Again, I'm not going to go through it, but it's pretty much like the winch.
Make sure it's connected. Make sure none of the wires are chafed or cracked or bent over something, busted otherwise, grounding out. And then use your DMM. To check your
shit.
So
first thing I usually do when I teach electrical stuff is I tell people, go to your source. Because when you start skipping around is when you got issues. And I kind of broke this down in steps and tried to make it as simple as I could, as if somebody were reading the notes and using it to guide themselves through an electrical repair. But I always tell people, when you're dealing with an electrical issue, unless you're a skilled diagnostician, go right to the light. Or whatever circuit is, whatever the end result is, check for power and ground.
Yeah.
If you have power and ground there, obviously it's the bulb. Double down. You can check resistance through it. And if you have no resistance, it's definitely the bulb. If you don't have power and ground, you go and check your ground side. Make sure you have ground to an actual known good ground. And then if you do, you follow your power back to your fuse. If you have power at the fuse but not at the light, you got an open somewhere. Pretty simple. So,
process of elimination.
It really is, and it's just, again, it's following power flow.
But then if you have a blown fuse, that could, you have to figure out why, right?
Absolutely, and I'm glad you brought that up because I was ready to skip right over that part of my notes. There is no such thing as a bad fuse. I love when people are like, I had a bad fuse, put another one, it was great. And then they come back a week later, they're like, man,
oh, I had another bad fuse.
Man,
bad
this fuse. Napa makes shitty fuses. This is like the third one I had to put in. So you're blowing a fuse for a reason. You've got a short to ground, or you've got a device
way
that's drawing.
Way overpowered overdraw. Device.
Right.
So and a fuse is meant to blow.
Yes.
Every single fuse on the planet is designed to fail.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
That's its sole purpose, right?
Yep. Failure.
And you can't have a bad fuse.
No.
Because it failed. That's exactly
a
the
bad
point.
Fuse is the one that doesn't. The
right?
Whole thing
yeah, there you go. That's a good point. Absolutely. So yeah, I know a million times I've dealt, you know, over the years with customers that are like, oh, I got a bad fuse. And they're like, three bad fuses in a row. No, you don't have a bad fuse. You have a short
yeah.
Or you have something that's drawing too much.
You are a bad fuse.
Yeah, right.
I'm about to blow my fuse.
So, and there's some points in here to going through and checking, you know, going a step further and checking for shorts and things like that in the notes that, you know, you guys will have access to on Patreon. All right.
Fridges.
Oh, my God.
I love my fridge.
You do.
I use the shit out of my fridge, too.
I like mine, too, now that I got it working right.
Yeah.
Before, I was not happy with it. So, first thing I'm going to say is, and I ruined a cooler worth of food, take whatever connector it comes with, right? And whatever 12-volt receptacle is in your car. Take those two and throw them out. And then order the ARB threaded socket kit.
And it's worth every penny.
Yeah, won't pull out. Yeah,
no, it is. It is. You got to do that. And I
first and then have a professional set it up, because unless you're fully confident of running that wire correctly, crimping those ends correctly, and threading it all together, have a professional set it up.
Yeah. So, like I said, I ruined a cooler worth of food once, and that was enough for me. You know, $70 worth of food and drinks in there, and they're gone in, you know, a couple hours because the connector came undone. So issue, we talked about this last show. Issue with mine was it was killing the battery. It was not, the cooler would shut off, all kinds of issues. Turned out to be a ground problem. I had a shared ground and just wasn't a good location.
Yeah.
Put it in another, did a voltage drop test on the negative side, figured out that the ground was, you know, I had a huge drop, voltage drop on it, fixed it up. System's worked great since. But that one ground was ground for my audio stuff. It was everything in the back.
Yep.
Yeah.
And changing the grounds around to individual grounds and making sure everything was closer to the actual load devices made a huge difference. So good, clean grounds are really important. Again, you want to make sure everything's fused. So a couple problems with fridges. Fridge seems to draw more power, or depletes battery quickly. And again, you're going to do voltage drops on both the power side and the negative side. Nothing more than a half a volt. If you have anything more than a half a volt, that's your issue.
Yeah.
A lot of times that's what it is. These fridges really don't fail a whole lot. I had mine apart. It's pretty simple. It's not complex. Fridge doesn't turn on. Again, it's a power and ground issue to the you know, whatever you're using to feed the power. So, you know, as well, use your digital multimeter to check for voltage at your positive side, negative side, and then you just kind of follow power flow back again.
Yeah.
That's really it for fridges. Radios. So, radio, and as Roy from Alpine said, plug and play should be a definite. If you don't have a solid knowledge of electrical systems, you can do some serious damage to audio stuff. The example of that is, let's say that you are building your own system, right? And you're running two subs. And you want to run a 1-ohm stable. You want to run them on a 1-ohm stable amp. You have to make sure you have those wired right to do that. And they need to be wired in parallel, right? And you need two 2-ohm subs to do that. So, and I put the formula down below, R1 times R2 is over R1 plus R2. Equals your resistance total, in that case is 1 ohm. That gets you to right. But if you don't understand that, you smoke an amp, smoke a head unit.
Easily.
Yep. Ruin subs. So you got to have a good understanding of all that. If you don't, plug and play is the way to go. And again, same thing. Make sure that you're using the right, correct gauge wiring for both speaker wire and ground systems. I threw a size calculator in the notes. Equally as important, connections are all good, all that stuff. Problems and possible solutions. Feedback through speakers usually denotes a poor ground. Extreme parasitic draw. Ran into this with mine. Didn't we have that issue with yours too, the Meisterbox?
Yeah.
So I had my battery would die overnight. I would check parasitic draw, and my Jeep was at like 50 milliamps, perfectly acceptable. Yeah. But it would die overnight. So what I ended up doing was putting a graphing recording multimeter on it and left it on overnight. And I had some high peaks that were on for quite a bit throughout the night. So it would pull, you know, 2 amps. At like 11 p.m. at night for like 45 minutes. So then I went through the process of figuring out what module. So I actually, we put a scan tool on it and data recorded, and we could see the CAN bus system coming alive at night, pulling all the modules up and then shutting back down eventually. And you go through the process of isolating that. You can either do it with the breakout box, or you can do it with, you know, by disconnecting the actual module. And sure enough, it was a damn master box.
The Maestro unit, it's so temperamental. And part of that is, you know, the communication with the CAN bus system.
Mm-hmm.
Jeep's real inconsistent with the communication with that. So it's a combination of one poorly designed thing, and then, of course, Jeep being very proprietary with the way the CAN bus system works.
Yeah, well, I mean, any CAN bus systems are very finicky, and you know, it is a tough system to work with. But, you know, like I said, I've run into a couple of those now where they've caused problems. Didn't you also have one that caused like a no start or stall?
Mine did something. It was several years ago, but I couldn't remember what it was. But
did some weird stuff. So they're going, you know, what they do is they pull the bus down. Yeah. And then the car can't communicate. So another common issue I hear is poor radio reception. You don't hear it as much anymore because everybody's streaming everything. But, you know, usually that's a poor head unit ground. The reason you're getting bad reception is because it'll actually find ground through the antenna circuit. So and that's already low wavelength that's coming in.
Well, then also people put stubby antennas on.
Yes.
Which doesn't have the correct feet of of stuff for that. So you got two things going on there. Yeah. But in our electrical conversation, the ground is the cause there.
Absolutely. And then, you know, I hear a lot of complaints about poor sound quality, and the number one issue for that is buy a fucking Alpine setup.
Buy an Alpine.
Problem fixed.
That's a good way to put
problem
it.
Problem solved.
Yeah.
Buy an Alpine.
Man, I feel like I've learned so much. You always come prepared, and it's
thank you.
I learn a lot, and just hanging around with you guys, it's tremendous. If you have those questions about electricity, I'm going to give you Don's personal phone number here, and you just call him directly.
Yeah, call me anytime between 11 p.m. and 6 a.m.
But info@jeeplifepodcast.com, we'll try to figure that out or make a specific episode for that. Or maybe, you know, join our Patreon, and you have access to all these show notes and the links that are included in them. Because I'm too lazy to make it available on our regular show notes, so I have to have Don do it, and he won't do it for free. So,
fuck you, pay me.
That's right.
Pay me.
Yeah. Thanks, Don, for coming in and doing all the extra work on this. It's awesome.
Yeah,
appreciate it.
Absolutely. Like I said, stuff will be on Patreon, and I think Billy and I were talking. Next up in a couple weeks, we'll be we're gonna talk about building some tons.
Heck yeah! One ton swaps. Yeah.
There we go. Let's do it. Yeah.
Jason just woke up over here. He's like, what? One ton swaps? What are we doing?
When you said you got me a special little something.
No, it wasn't one tons.
Why not?
You can buy one tons and we can build them.
No, I need you to find them.
Those were wontons.
I need them to fall off the back.
Wontons. I'm not rolling noodles for you, man.
They need to fall off the back of
Nothing falls off of a truck anymore.
You know, speaking of falling off the truck, I'm about to fall off and go to sleep.
Yeah, I hear you.
Bill, where can people find us?
Well, everybody, I want you to head over to our Linktree, linktr.ee/JeepLifePodcast. And if not, we have a YouTube channel, Facebook, Instagram. We're available on all of your streaming platforms. So just search Jeep Life Podcast, and you're going to get hooked up with all of the latest and greatest from us.
Yeah. Do it.
The greatest hits.
This is the crowded studio, but I've actually enjoyed the setup in here. It's pretty nice. It's cozy with all four of us.
It's kind of warmer in here with the four of us.
It is a little warm.
Yeah.
But hopefully we can do this four chair every once in a while. It's nice
good time.
To do. Anyway, thanks for hanging out with us. Monday nights are when we record our live show.
Sometime sure between is 7:30
Sunday and Tuesday 3 p.m.
The big Jeep Wave.